Welcome to this podcast from the Medical Journal of Australia. My name is Sam Hunt, the MJA's news and online editor. Today we are discussing Doctors at War as part of our commemorations for Anzac Day. My special guest is retired Colonel Robert Lykman, who served in the Australian Army for 24 years. He was a senior military doctor, and his final posting was as the Director of Army Health in Canberra. Retired Colonel Robert Lykman, thank you for joining me.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
Let me start by asking you, what does Anzac Day mean for you as a retired senior military doctor?
Well, Sam, Anzac Day means exactly the same to me as any other person who served in the armed forces. On Anzac Day, I'm just a soldier, not a doctor. And I think mostly about those people I personally served with, rather than those who've been killed in previous wars, people I didn't know and mostly didn't know about.
And can you tell me about the unique role that medical doctors play in the Australian Defence Force?
Well, military medicine is virtually a specialty in its own right. It's not just general practice, but it does include that. But it also includes elements of emergency medicine, public health, sports medicine, and psychiatry. On the whole, the patients we encounter are young and fit, but some soldiers serve into middle age and beyond, and that adds a different spectrum of disease to manage. Doctors enjoy a special relationship with commanders at all levels. Good health and emotional well-being are pivotal to morale, and good morale is essential for winning battles. A commanding officer who does not listen to his regimental medical officer is a bad commanding officer.
Australia has a proud history of medical doctors serving their country. You were born in England and you studied classics, Oriental languages and medicine at Oxford and then at Middlesex Hospital in London. You were a doctor first. How special is it to be able to apply your skill set in a military context?
Well, in the military, the number of soldiers that you're responsible for as a medical officer is usually less than would be the usual case in civilian practice. On the other hand, they are with you 24 hours a day on operations, so there is the opportunity to get to know them much better than you might in civilian practice. Also, the regimental medical officer stands outside the chain of command, so he can be confided in without disciplinary concerns or loss of face.
And Robert, I'm curious, does that put you in an uncomfortable position if you're outside the chain of command as a military doctor?
Not really. It is actually an advantage. Of course, medical officers have rank, and in medical units, at least when we had them, the commanding officer would also be a medical officer. But there is still a special relationship between doctors and their patients, albeit members of the armed forces. And I think that playing that dual role is extremely valuable and very rewarding.
And Robert, you served in the Australian Army for 24 years. You served overseas three times, including to Rwanda in 1995. What stands out for you as your most memorable time overseas?
Well, as far as Rwanda is concerned, the deployment was profoundly disturbing. It was the first time that any of us had witnessed hundreds of dead bodies on the scale of the Western Front in World War I. And I do not think that there is anyone who served in either of the two Rwanda contingents who was not seriously emotionally wounded by it, some of them permanently. The medical situation was extremely frustrating, as we were not able to prevent the massacre, and we were only allowed to provide a very limited medical assistance to the casualties when it occurred. We were really just helpless witnesses to a genocide. And for us doctors, who are committed to saving life, that was painful beyond any imagining.
I can imagine that experience really would have stayed with you, Robert. What was it like to finally come home? And how long was your deployment?
The tour of duty in Rwanda for senior medical officers was 3 months. Coming home was indeed a shock, and I can well remember getting off the plane in Sydney at the airport. Music was playing, neon lights were flashing, people were going about their business just as it had been the day that we left. And I thought, don't they know? But you know, that kind of pain doesn't stay with you forever. The body is remarkably good at healing itself, and that includes healing mental wounds as well. And it took a number of months, I think, before I felt quite normal again. And then it was almost as if the world had done a complete turnover, and I began to wonder whether I'd ever been there. But of course the memory stays with you, and one of the things I've found personally is that those awful memories can be controlled, put away if you like in a cupboard at the back of your mind and not let out. The unfortunate thing for the young soldiers with post-traumatic stress is that the experience that they've had continue to dominate their everyday life. That is not very common. Most people get over it, and certainly over the years I spent in Townsville with soldiers coming home from Afghanistan, it was quite normal for them after a period of time to actually adjust to normal life and even on occasions to go on deployments again.
Let's fast forward now from Rwanda in 1995 and to Afghanistan. In 2007, I understand you were very involved in helping soldiers who had post-traumatic stress disorder from Afghanistan, coming home and reintegrating them back into Australia.
Yes, it was a problem that to which we gave a lot of thought and a lot of discussion, because some of the soldiers who came back from their service in Afghanistan, including officers, had been extremely traumatized and were in many respects out of control. And there was no facility within their individual units for managing them. There's only a certain number of light duties you can put people on in an infantry battalion. And after much discussion with the then Chief of Staff and the commander of the 3rd Brigade, we set up what we called the Soldier Recovery Centre. We were fortunate to be able to take over some premises which had been vacated by the Dental Corps. And we provided a place where units could send soldiers that they couldn't manage. It was quite a challenge, really. It was a program based very much on physical activity. The location was good because it was right opposite the gym and the swimming pool in the barracks. I knew that there were some soldiers who couldn't face the thought of putting on a uniform, but I insisted, nevertheless, that they parade every day because they were soldiers. And we took them through a series of activities, which of course included medical treatment and psychiatric help, and a lot of physical activity. The other condition that I made was that no distinction was to be made between the soldiers who had suffered psychological injuries and those who had suffered physical injuries. So if you'd had a fractured femur and you needed rehabilitation, this clearly couldn't be done in a unit, so you went to the Soldier Recovery Centre. And I also insisted that it should be called the Soldier Recovery Centre, because I firmly believed, and still do, that most of the people who suffer from these effects of psychological trauma will recover. It took a little while to get it going, but it was quite successful in its way, particularly for Townsville, where the majority of soldiers started when they went overseas to the campaign in Afghanistan. But later, it was suggested that we help them set up one in Darwin, and I believe at a later stage, an Ogra Barracks in Brisbane also established a similar arrangement. And I think, in its way, that's probably the most useful thing I did in my years as a senior medical officer.
Sounds like a very rewarding experience. My special guest today is retired Colonel Robert Lykman, who was a senior military doctor and served for 24 years in the Australian Army. Colonel Lykman, some doctors listening to this podcast may be wondering, what's the difference between military medicine and civilian medicine?
Well, it doesn't differ, except that it embraces a much wider range of skills than is required of a normal GP, because of the different situations in which doctors find themselves. Now, one of the important things about the Australian Army is that we do not have any specialist medical officers in the regular army. There's no facility for training them. There are no military hospitals anymore. The army is too small to be able to justify having that. And therefore, all the specialist medical officers who are in uniform are reservists, and they are absolutely essential to any deployment. When we went to Rwanda, for example, we deployed a full field hospital in both of the two deployments, and they were staffed. The senior ranks of the specialists were all provided by reservists, and I was a reservist myself at that time. And the same with Iraq, same with Afghanistan. We had limited specialist involvement in Afghanistan because we relied very much on our allies to provide that level of service. But it is essential that we maintain a reserve force with specialists, and that we make sure that they get well treated and looked after, so that when suddenly something happens and we need to send a force overseas, we can call on them to be ready to go and provide their excellent specialist skills.
And what kind of specialists do you need in somewhere like Afghanistan?
Well, first of all, you need a surgeon. You need probably a vascular surgeon, an orthopedic surgeon, an eye surgeon, and then you need an anaesthetist and an intensivist, and you need a specialist physician too, because of tropical diseases and things which are ever present. So the whole range of specialties, even less obscure things like dermatology and so on, they all have their place in the armed forces when you're on service overseas.
And Colonel Lykman, can I ask why you joined the army? And where were you in your life when you made that decision?
I came from a military family. Both my father and my grandfather were in the army in England. And from my earliest time, I joined the cadets at school. And then when I went to university, I joined the Territorial Army. It seemed a normal and natural thing to do. But it was while I was serving in the territorials as a young man that it occurred to me that it was actually more useful to take bullets out of people rather than put them in. And that really was the time in which I decided that I would go back to university and become a doctor. And that's what I did. But I remained a soldier at heart.
And Robert, you've written several books about military history. What fascinates you so much about this topic?
I'm very interested in history. I've always liked the past and found it fascinating. And I always think that the past is more interesting than the future because there's more of it. The first book that I wrote was the regimental history of the 9th Field Ambulance, which was a unit that I was the commanding officer of until it was disbanded. And when it was disbanded, everybody said, we must have a regimental history. And it occurred to me that if I didn't do it, it wasn't going to happen. That I found fascinating. The research into the unit's history, the people in it, the way that ordinary people became soldiers and went to war, started in World War I, of course. The unit was raised in 1916. And that book was well received in the Medical Corps. But it also opened my curiosity to other people who I had come across in the course of the research. And I then wrote a couple of biographies. So then I thought, well, I'll expand my thought a bit. So I wrote a book called The Gallipoli Doctors, which was individual mini biographies of all the Australian doctors who served at Gallipoli. And that was a wonderful eye-opener. I have been to Gallipoli several times, including, I may say, on Anzac Day in 2015. I couldn't stop there. Having written about the doctors at Gallipoli, I thought, well, what about the other doctors in World War One? What about those who fought in the Middle East, like Wilson, and took Damascus? And what about those who fought on the Western Front? And what happened at Pozieres? What were the doctors doing there? Who were they? And before much time had passed, I wrote another book called Australian Doctors on the Western Front. And that was most satisfactory. I felt I had really achieved something in recording the lives of these early doctors who, in very difficult conditions, had achieved a great deal and are now, of course, almost totally forgotten.
And Robert, let's zoom in on World War One, zoom in on Gallipoli. What kind of things were doctors on the ground faced with?
Well, the first thing that you have to reckon with, and this applies just as much to the Western Front as at Gallipoli, that the medical officer could do little more than control hemorrhage, cover wounds, and give pain relief. And as a result of that, of course, many people died who could potentially have been saved if they had had more sophisticated medical treatment. And it's a very sad fact that two of the doctors who were at Gallipoli shot themselves when they got back to Egypt. And presumably this was a feeling of guilt because they felt they had let their soldiers down because they had been unable to provide the sort of care that would have saved their lives. However, by the end of the war, great advances had been made, particularly in the treatment of shock, and we find intravenous fluid replacement and then later on blood transfusion being introduced, and then the concept of surgical teams being as far forward as possible so that people who were wounded could actually receive surgery as quickly as possible instead of having to be evacuated 25 miles or so from the front line.
And when was this?
Towards the end of the World War One, it gradually developed. And there were other changes. Plastic surgery was born in World War One. And questions were beginning to be asked about that mysterious condition called shell shock. It was the conflict that stimulated progress, and it continues to do so.
Robert, Colonel Lykman, thank you very much for joining me today.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you very much for inviting me.
My special guest has been retired Colonel Robert Lykman, who served in the Australian Army for 24 years as a senior medical doctor. His final posting was as Director of Army Health in Canberra. You can listen to more podcasts from the Medical Journal of Australia on our website at mja.com.au or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks very much for listening.